You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, earlier today, Fed Bank of Minneapolis President Neel Kashkari, he made some comments. He talks about two interest rate increases this year to counter risk posed by inflation. I mean, we're talking so much about what comes next in terms of our economy. And our next guest definitely talks a lot about and thinks about our economic future. He's Glenn Hubbard. He's Dean Emeritus and Professor of Finance and Economics at Columbia Business School, former chairman of the U.S. Council of Economic Advisors. That was under President George W. Bush. Serves on the boards of ADP, BlackRock, MetLife. He's done a lot, does a lot, including writing a new book. It's out later this month. It's called The Wall and the Bridge, Fear and Opportunity in Disruption's Wake. We are so delighted to have Glenn Hubbard joining us on the phone from New York City. Dean Hubbard, nice to have you here with us. How are you? And Happy New Year.
Great, thanks. I hope you're having a good new year so far.
So far, so good. And we want to get into your book, but we feel like it relates to so much of what we try to figure out, what comes next, what should come next. Love to just get your thoughts about today's economic environment, what you think is ahead.
Well, it's a great question. I think in two tracks, you know, in the here and now, the inflation concerns, I think, are real. I think monetary policy has been behind the curve, and we've spent probably too much time on demand and not enough time on getting supply chains right and supply right. So I think that can still sort itself out, but it's definitely a worry. I worry, you know, the sort of the theme in the book as well, that there's some slower moving things that are even more dangerous for our economy. Big positive changes in technology and globalization that leave many of us quite much better off, but make some of us worse off, and our politics and our economics are affected.
So the question is, Dean Hubbard, what are the solutions that you propose to tackle some of these big picture challenges that, by the way, are much bigger than what we think about with the Omicron variant or even getting beyond this pandemic? I mean, the genesis of this goes back to before President Trump was elected.
Oh, sure. We're thinking about decades of change that, again, have been largely positive for the American economy. We all celebrate technological advance and globalization, but for many individuals and many communities, the news has not been so positive. You know, chances are when anyone listening to this took Econ 101, I hope they liked the course, and their professor probably said something like, you know, technological advance, trade makes us better off, and then probably mumbled something because the gainers can compensate the losers. The problem is we haven't been doing that. And you asked about solutions, and I think there are big, bold things we can do to build bridges, to help people compete in the world, which would be everything from bold support for community colleges and training, support for low-wage work in the country, and most importantly, an attitude shift in Washington and in the economics profession that notices these things. It goes all the way back to what Adam Smith would have taught us, founder of economics. We really, really need to help people compete.
Well, it's interesting. First of all, music to our ears. I have a degree in economics. I went to Barnard College, worked actually at the business school. Tim has an MBA from Columbia Business School and was there when you were dean.
That's why I have to call you dean. I can't even call you Dean Emeritus.
Bless you both.
So we're all in on this. You know, I do think about some of the gaps and divisions that we have in our society, certainly exacerbated by the pandemic. But, you know, innovation, embracing it, like not everybody has been able to benefit by all the disruption and innovation out there. Your ideas and what you write about in this book about bridges versus walls, how can that help more people benefit in our society and our economy?
Another great question. Here's the problem. Walls are very seductive. They're very seductive for politicians to tell people, I'm going to protect you. I'm going to protect you from trade or from immigration or from technological advance. But the flip side of a wall is I'm also protecting you from all the good things that come from all of that. The right answer to the wall isn't what economists often talk about, which is just let the market rip, kind of laissez-faire, if you will. The right answer is building bridges. And I think if we focus on, A, preparing people to compete in the world that is and will be, and reconnect them when they fall out of the economic boat, that's important. you know, classical economists like Smith always felt that the goal of an economy is mass flourishing. It's everyone participating. That should be our moral and our economic imperative. We've got to push back on the wall.
Dean Hubbard, we just have about a minute and a half, and then we'll do some more news and come back some more. But, you know, we're talking about, you know, you do in your book about building bridges. Who best builds those bridges that we need today? Is it politicians? Is it corporate leaders? Who is it?
I think it's all of the above. Business leaders have to understand that social support for the system, meaning market capitalism, isn't a given. And business leaders need to acknowledge that and pitch in. In the book, I talk about examples like George Eastman, of business leaders who built entire communities largely for their own business, but also to help others. Government needs to begin by just noticing the problem and looking at what worked in the past, like the land-grant colleges or the GI Bill. So it's really all of the above.
Is there the political will to get that done in Washington, though?
Well, the cheap answer would be to say no, but I say yes. And the reason I say yes is we're having a sterile debate over capitalism versus socialism, as opposed to solving people's problems. There is a huge opportunity for a leader, be he or she a Democrat or a Republican, to come in and say, you know what? I can make people and communities better off. That's a winner.
Dean Hubbard, good to have you back with us. In the first chapter, you write about a standing room only event at Columbia Business School just 5 days ahead of the election of 2016. I was actually in that room back in 2016. You did that event with Professor Ray Horton, who was teaching modern political economy for years. I was in that class also. And this was all at a time when I think a lot of people in hindsight would say that President Trump 5 days later really surprised a lot of Americans by being elected. I'm wondering, though, because you write that you kind of saw this coming, and a lot of people kind of saw this coming, and the way that a whole portion of the American population was disenfranchised due to globalization. What is the way for us to move forward from that? What is the way to re-enfranchise those people?
It's an excellent question. I think the issue is to notice the problem. You know, I can't claim to have predicted President Trump's electoral success, but I do think the slow-moving disenfranchisement of many Americans in communities had slipped off the radar screen of many business leaders, many politicians, and dare I say it, even many economists. You know, there's a famous question the Queen of England asked the London School of Economics about the financial crisis. Why did nobody see it coming? And you might ask the same question here. So I do think we need a new attitude among economists and in Washington to notice, to push, and to come up with real solutions.
How has the pandemic, you were already writing this book and you note that, and then the pandemic hit. How has that impacted your thinking and your writing?
Well, the pandemic, of course, you know, makes it clear that there's not one single labor market. There are some individuals who use technology to work at home. There are many Americans for whom that's not a real possibility. And not just the pandemic today, but the future, from artificial intelligence and machine learning to the adaptation of the economy to fight climate change, these are all things that suggest really big structural shifts about to happen, and we really need to get ahead of them in a way we didn't get ahead of earlier technological changes or globalization.
You know, we talk a lot about incentives, and we talk about market incentives. We learn a lot about incentives in business school, and I'm wondering what the incentives are for policymakers to actually make these types of changes, because I think many people could argue that a lot of them look short term, right? 2 years, an election cycle, 6 years perhaps, or 4 years for presidents. What are the incentives here for policymakers?
Well, I think many policymakers think this is all just too hard to do. It's easier just to throw out words like, let's build a wall. The problem with that is it's not too hard to do. In the middle of the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln launched the land-grant colleges, the Homestead Act, the Transcontinental Railroad. I think that was a pretty tough time for decision making. As World War II was coming to a close, we certainly did the GI Bill for welcoming service people coming home. So we can do this. I think a politician who figures out that these sort of structural fixes actually help a lot of people probably finds political gold, not just economic gold.
You have a great line in your book. An overarching lesson for economic policy is the greater the benefits of disruption from openness, the more gainers should compensate losers, because disruption innovation, right? We certainly don't want to stop it. It has created some incredible things, but people, industry, things are impacted. People, individuals, right? And we need to not just ignore that.
Well, and to not ignore it means to notice it. You know, I comment in the book, my wife has always had this great categorization of the world into two groups, economists and real people. She always reminds me that, you know, economists tend to think about all these benefits of things, but we never really process what's happening to a lot of individuals and communities. Politicians are real people, but they need our help in noticing this.
Why do we keep ignoring and, like, kind of leaving behind big swaths of our society?
Well, I think things happen slowly. I don't think people intend to do it. But over time, by not noticing and taking bold action, we do. And for those who say, well, you know, we can just turn back to a standard neoliberal mindset, Milton Friedman or Friedrich Hayek, I would say I just don't think there's the social support for a market economy if we don't help people more. And that's not a radical thing to say. It goes back to Adam Smith and classical thinkers. In some sense, we got to go home again.
So what do you make of what China's doing right now? They are very much, as you know, cracking down on industries, really looking about kind of redistribution of wealth, or making sure that, or trying to, it seems, have greater parts of their society, you know, enjoy some of the wealth creation that's happened. What do you make of what they're doing? Yeah.
I think it's tough in an authoritarian economy like China to do what they're trying to do. The goal shouldn't be simply to redistribute wealth. The goal ought to be to help everybody participate and flourish. Don't see much of that in what China's trying to do. And lamentably, whether it's talking about Republicans or Democrats in the United States, not a lot of that either. We do have some programs that could be modified, enhanced, beefed up to do better, but I'm not hearing that discussion in Washington or Beijing for that matter.
As the former chair of the Council of Economic Advisors under President George W. Bush, you've certainly had the ear, not just of the president, but also later of candidates running for president, Dean Hubbard. I'm wondering, if you were advising President Biden right now, what advice you would give to him?
Focus on helping everybody participate in our economy. That's not just an economic statement. It's about dignity and flourishing. So tangibly, that means supporting work, supporting people's ability to connect to the economy. And if somebody loses his or her job from a structural change, help them get another one. I think that's a lot better. If I were to define what I would mean by Build Back Better, it would be that.
Well, certainly a lot for us to think about. We really appreciate your time, and good luck with the book. Glenn Hubbard, Dean Emeritus, Professor of Finance and Economics over at Columbia Business School. His new book out, The Wall and the Bridge, Fear and Opportunity in Disruption's Wake. It is out later this month.